Look, there's a well-proven route to getting permits. So obviously, the issue has been the moratorium on issuing permits whilst they've gone through getting the new code. And obviously, they've been focused on giving permits or changing the patterns for operating miners first. So very difficult to give a specific timeframe. But I was in Mali last week, had a number of meetings with people within government and our stakeholders. So look, we're making progress and hoping to get our permits moving forward as quickly as we can.
Bert Monroe, Kora Gold, good afternoon to you, or I should say good evening. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So very interesting project here, and that's really what attracted us to your project. You're in West Africa. Let's start with all of that. What brought you to West Africa and why this project?
Yeah, so me personally, I've worked in West Africa for over 15 years. Initially, I was living and working in Liberia back in my early mid-20s. But then the company I was with at the time bought an asset in Mali that moved me across to Mali. I've been involved with Kora since 2017. Kora's been around since 2012 as a private company. But I IPO'd in 2017, really all in Mali. It's also got an asset in Senegal as well. Since 2017, I was a non-exec director originally. In January of 2020, I became CEO of Kora. So obviously running it since then, we've obviously been driving our primary asset, which is called Sankara, forward since then. So good job. But I've always enjoyed working in Mali.
Okay, let's talk about your primary asset here, and then I'd like to talk about working in Africa, West Africa, your experience in getting things done and the infrastructure and all that. But let's first talk about the primary asset. What can you tell me about that? What do you have that you can tell me about? What's in the ground, and where are you at with all of that?
Yeah, sure. So the Sankara Gold Project is a plus million ounce JORC compliant MRE. It's predominantly an oxide deposit. It's 70% of oxides, which I'm sure you guys and many listeners will know. You've got a really nice high recovery free digging ore. And also, in terms of processing, you don't need a crushing circuit. So it helps with your OPEX on both fronts. The stage we're at, we've delivered a positive DFS reserves on the project. It's fully permitted from an environmental perspective. And we've also agreed a debt mandate with a local West African bank for $70 to support the building of it. So as it stands, it's essentially a development-ready project, really nice looking project for pit oxide, as I mentioned. We're fundamentally waiting to get our mining permit. I think as people probably will be aware in Mali, they've been going through a transition where they'd be putting in a new mining code in Mali. There have been a number of operating miners transitioning to the new mining code. We're obviously waiting our line in the queue to obviously move forward and hopefully get our little mining permit in the not too distant future so we can get on with building this mine.
Okay, so let me ask a little bit about that. I have no experience working in Mali or investing in Mali. Tell me about the change and what does it usually take to get a permit, and what's a rough ETA on that, your expectation on getting that approved?
Yeah, so I suppose it's been a reasonably unique situation. The government obviously brought in a new mining code. It's a relatively new government, which came in 2020. They obviously decided to do a review of mining permits under the old government, and obviously alongside that, they decided to bring in a new mining code as well. So the code was, I guess, first launched in 2023. They then effectively published it in the middle of last year, August 24. The new code got signed in. But I guess the situation you've been in, you've seen, and I guess like people will have probably seen in the news, a lot of they've basically been focused on getting the operating mining companies to transfer on the new mining code, and that's been their focus. Obviously, the new mining code does include higher taxes, as you can probably imagine. And therefore, it's most advantageous then to focus on getting operating miners onto the new code first. And I guess lots of developers are sat there, I guess, waiting your turn in the queue to get our permit. So it's been unfortunate timing for us, sadly, given the timing of us delivering our feasibility study just as they launched a new mining code. So it's a bit unlucky in that respect for us as a company and obviously for our shareholders who've been sat there waiting to get the permit. But look, there's a well-established process in mind. It's been commercially operating gold mines there for 20, 30 years. Obviously, Randgold, which is obviously now Barrick, have been operating good mines there for a number of decades. Obviously, a number of others guys like B2 Gold, I'm sure people on there have got a massive mind in Lawley. So look, there's a well-proven route to getting permits. So obviously, the issue has been the moratorium on issuing permits whilst they've gone through getting the new code. And obviously they've been focused on giving permits or changing the patterns for operating miners first. So very difficult to give a specific time frame, but I was in Mali last week, had a number of meetings, with people within government and our stakeholders. So look, we're making progress and hoping to get our permit moving forward as quickly as we can.
Excellent. So who do you have on staff, or can you talk about that to help you navigate this? And what's your experience in navigating all this? And although I don't have experience in Mali, I do understand different parts of the world. This happens all the time. And it really, it depends on the background of the CEO, such as yourself, or who do you have on staff again to navigate the politics of this?
Yeah, sure. So in my previous life before I joined Cora, 5 years ago, I was, the BDI, the sort of independent business development at another mining company. We bought, financed, and built the mine in Mali. So I guess I got direct experience of going through this exact process in Mali. And obviously was there while I ran for a few years as well. I think like the key guy on site for us really is a guy called Siapi Kumara. He's a Malian guy, my country manager. He was educated in Russia, speaks 5 languages fluently, has got a PhD in geology. He's a real hero of a guy who really holds relationships. He's obviously of that age and experience. You know, he's in his 50s. He's been around the block. He's been involved in a lot of projects in Mali and across West Africa. Great that he's both got a technical background and experience, but he's now been country manager for Cora for 12 years, 13 years. So he's... the roots and the rate got to go. So like before the permit moratorium came in place, on completion of our feasibility study, we applied for our environmental permit and received the environmental permit in 3 months from application. So it was a straightforward process and we followed it. So I think I'm happy that we know how to operate in Africa and know how to operate in Mali. And obviously it's just the slightly unfortunate timing with the new mining code coming into effect just when we're needing to apply for our permit post DFS.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the project. I think you said you had 1 million ounces in the ground. Is that correct? I'm assuming there is a chance to explore more, to get more and find more. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So the resource is 1 million ounces. We've only drilled about 7 kilometers of the 30-plus-kilometer strike length. Our focus as a business has really been about getting the project build ready and get it into production as quickly as possible. Our shareholders have been really supportive of that. So we really focused in on the three main discoveries, the three main pits, which are in a kind of string in a row, which, as I said, cover about 6 kilometers. So all the ounces are in those deposits. We've got an exploration target, JORC compliant exploration target on top for another around 1 million ounces, in addition to the thing, which is JORC compliant MRE. So for us, look, we firmly believe the resources will grow significantly from here. It's very under drilled. And I think, because of the nature of our share register and the support we've had to support us getting into construction, we probably stopped doing step after all programs sooner than others might have. And then we really focused in on completing a feasibility study showing a very high return. We did our economics on the DFS at 1750 gold and had a 1.3-year payback period. So that was a 1750, so $1,000 below where we are now. So, it's a very highly cash generative project with a very quick payback. So that's really been our focus, and our strategy was that we would then look to grow the project out of cash flow rather than do it from dilution and raising more equity at that time.
You just said something really key that every shareholder is keenly aware of, or a prospective shareholder, is dilution. So what do you do, or what have you done to protect us against dilution? And also, I'm coming from the point of view, dilution's almost, it is inevitable in this business, but I just want to see projects going forward and the money's going to something. But to talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, as an operating fundamentals, we operate at as low a cost as we can. We have no office outside of Mali. So you have an office in Bamako. I sleep above the office when I'm in Mali. So it's got an office on the downstairs. It's got 3 bedrooms upstairs. So I literally sleep in the office, so you're not spending hotels. In the UK, we don't have an office. I work from home, and I've got a CFO who works from home as well. So I'd say we're as lean as we can. Very unfortunately, because it's obviously people's jobs and livelihoods, but we 70% of the operating team of the team in country redundant during the period of moratorium, which is obviously something to say very sadly, because they were colleagues and people I'd worked with. But the reality is, you know, we need to cover costs and need to make sure our cash lasted as long as possible. And until we have, you know, a permit, we can't move forward. So we've done everything we can possibly to run the company as low a cost as we can. On the flip side, and more proactively, obviously we've done very cost-effective exploration. For example, one of the camps, you know, we build our own exploration camps. We run all the catering and all the laundry about ourselves rather than outsourcing it. So we run our exploration very leanly. We integrated solar into our camps quite early. We tried a very quick payback instead of running diesel jetsets and stuff. So we've always looked in a forward way around trying to run. But I think fundamentally, as you'll know, drilling out oxide deposits is thankfully relatively cost effective. You're doing predominantly RC drilling and relatively shallow drillings. Our oxide goes to 150 meters in depth, up to 150 meters in depth plus. Our average drill holes for about 110 meters, we're drilling in, you know, it's an RC drill hole through oxide. So it gets you being fortunate. You can drive to a project in four and a half hours from Bermaco. The last 30 k's is on a dirt and ashrine road until we're on a nice tarmac road. So logistically, we've had advantages. We've leveraged that with, I guess, operations of how to operate in a cost-effective manner, yeah, trying to time work programs correctly. And I guess just being sort of street smart through, hopefully, a fair few years of experience of doing on the ground.
Got it. And then my last question, Steve, jumping in any time, is how much cash do you have in the bank or on hand just to get you through this?
Yeah, we got around $1 million US in the bank. So yeah, our cash is, it's, yeah, we're in a reasonable cash position in terms of what our cash burn is. We haven't committed to the significant, we aren't currently committed to any significant drill programs, which is normally your largest cost. As it stands this year, we just published an updated MRE. So obviously you've feed and done and paid that already earlier this month. Then we've obviously committed to updating our feasibility study over the course of the next few months. And that's fundamentally a desktop exercise. All the test work's already been gathered, all the samples have been processed at the lab already. So really that's a desktop exercise updating a feasibility study, which is 2 years old now. So that's a relatively ineffective, a relatively low cost exercise.
Excellent, Berg. Can you share about your significant shareholders? What percentage of insiders, institutions own the company?
Yeah, so the largest shareholder is a South African family, around 35% of the stock. They've had a hugely successful pedigree in the mining space. They've been involved in a number of very successful mining projects. I guess Lionel was probably the most successful one, which was, I think, traded out for over $7 billion when it was bought by Norilsk. So they've got a very successful pedigree in the mining sector. They've got another shareholder who's just under 20%. He's a private individual in the UK. He's got a background in resources and trading. So he's obviously a significant shareholder. And they've got a number of others. So yeah, around the 65% of the registers held by about five individuals. All of them, I guess, high net worth, ultra high net worth individuals with, I guess, a significant background in the natural resources space. I think in terms of their ability to support the project going forward and finance it, you know, we raised from those shareholders around $20 million at the start of last year in the form of a convertible loan note that had no coupon attached. And essentially it was due to convert when we received our mining permit. So we actually chose to give that money back to them because we didn't feel like we were selling their cash rather than them having it themselves, because the permit was obviously take longer than we expected to be received. So I think in terms of their ability to finance the equity portion of the build is obviously very strong. And obviously we'd be very fortunate to have supportive shareholders.
That means a lot to me on that real quick, Bird. That means a lot to me. You didn't dilute to get through this. You just raised it from them. That means that you have a lot of really strong hands and believers in the company.
Yeah. If you look at our fundraisers over the last 5 years, I think every fundraise we've done has been either at the market price or at a premium to market. And we've raised it with the vast majority of existing shareholders. So we don't have a history of doing discounted fundraisers, because ultimately they are generally all holding their corner or they're over investing. So, I'd be very fortunate that I've got the shareholders and they've been supportive, but I think it is important, as you say. So actually new people looking at the stock to see how we operate. We operate as a quasi private company in terms of use of funds, as opposed to, a public company. We're pretty lean. We don't spend a huge amount of money on marketing, fancy offices and that sort of thing.
Berg, how many shares outstanding do you have fully diluted? How many warrants do you guys have, or what's the strike where it's written at?
Yeah, so we got a little over 400 million shares at issue. And then no warrants. There is roughly at the moment about 4% in options. Average price is probably about 6p. Give or take the sum at 4, the sum at 6, and the sum at 10p. But obviously our share is currently trading between 2.5 and 3p. So I would say it's a pretty tight sort of capital structure in that space.
Do you have any news that you can share with us that may be coming up in the next quarter that you're able to share with us? And how do people find you if they want to invest?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, obviously we're AIM listed. So the London Stock Exchange, AIM Market. Our ticker is Cora, literally a little company named C-O-R-A. We're obviously on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter next. Obviously other things. I think in terms of news flow, we flagged it with the update of the MRE earlier this month, planning to tweak some optimization studies around the process flow sheet as we look to update our feasibility study. So when we did our feasibility study 2 years ago, like with all feasibility studies, you always think you can tweak it to make it a little better. We've done a few mine site visits and looked at other similar projects and operations as a team, trying to see how they're running in the intervening period. And we've just done some additional tests that we'd be working on, additional test work to see if there's ways we could slightly optimize the front end of the process flow sheet, which might quickly benefit us with slightly lighter capex or slightly lower opex if we're lucky. But obviously don't want to take anything for granted before the study's done. But then that will lead into a feasibility study. So with updated reserves and a full feasibility study. As I mentioned, all our economics, which you'll see published in presentations and websites, were all done on 1750 gold price. So obviously, the market's obviously moved on significantly from 2 years ago. And obviously people are using higher gold prices in their studies generally. So I think there should be pretty good project news flow over the next 4 or 5 months. Obviously, I guess when you're not in a drilling campaign, you're not going to have some drill results every 2 weeks. But I think there are some material bits of news to come out in the next 4 or 5 months to manage everyone's expectation. But I think ultimately, I suppose the most significant news for us is really around permitting. And I think if we're able to make progress with the permitting in country and to show the market and show shareholders that we're making progress with permitting, I think that would be the most significant trigger for Cora moving forward. And obviously, it would be a great moment for us. And obviously, we've got so many ducks in a row. And look, we're raring to go and get this thing built. So hopefully that will start coming through this year as soon as possible.
Or I don't know if this was mentioned or not, but could you tell us again your website and how people can reach you or somebody from your company if they want more information?
Yeah, so the website's coragold.com, so coragold.com. Again, Twitter and LinkedIn, literally coragold, coragold. Obviously on our website, you can sign up to subscribe and the newsletters and news releases. Obviously also on our website, there's a list of email addresses where you can email into the company if you've got questions. Info at Cora Gold or PR@coragold.com. Both will come through and you'll get a response if you've got any questions. Sure.
Excellent. Steve, do you have any other questions?
No.
Excellent. So, Berg, we'll just put all of this information that you gave, we'll put it all in the show notes below. And we'll see where things head from here. And we're interested in following the story.
Thanks, guys. It's really great to be on the show. And thanks a lot for giving me the time and asking me the questions. It's been nice to be able to give everyone an update and hopefully positive news ahead this year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Berg.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.